I'd like to start with a miracle. But since I'm not at the level where I can instantaneously manifest them, I would instead invite you to envision a miraculous situation. So please just imagine that at the snap of my fingers, there's a worldwide wave of illumination through which every person on Earth becomes fully aware of all the relevant facts about genetically engineered foods, and everybody's opinion about them becomes fully aligned with our best scientific knowledge. What do you think would happen? Well, if we adhere to the routine rhetoric of the proponents of these products, we would have to predict that such a global wave of enlightenment would cause all opposition to them to vanish. Because in the rendition of reality that they propound, all of the opposition is based on ignorance of the facts and based on irrational, unscientific fears. But in the world we actually inhabit, such a universal wave of enlightenment would not cause the opposition to the foods to vanish. What would vanish would be the foods themselves. That's right. If people actually understood all of the facts about genetically engineered food, and if their opinions became aligned with sound science, solid science, then this whole massive venture to reconfigure the genetic core of the world's food supply would collapse quite quickly. And that is why, despite their pretensions to want to educate the public about the facts, the proponents of these products, whether in industry or in scientific institutions or major universities, go out of their way to suppress the facts and to distort the facts and to keep the public in the dark about them. And they've been very successful about in doing that. Now, during the next 50 minutes or so, I am going to be sharing with you extensive information that will help clear up many of the key distortions, many of the key deceptions that have been propagated in the name of science, and it will allow you to gain a firmer understanding, clear up a lot of the confusion. And by the end of the presentation, you will see that there are at least five basic evidence-supported conclusions that can be reached. So one is that producing new foods through recombinant DNA technology, which is genetic engineering, is an inherently risky process. Second, that every genetically engineered food poses an abnormal level of risk. Three, the safety of those on the market has never been adequately established. And four, some of them have already been shown to be harmful. That's very important. And last, not only has the GE food venture been shown to be harmful, not only has the GE food venture, I skipped up to the above line, has the GE food venture been violating the standards of science, it has been damaging science and has injured it far more severely than has the campaign to deny global warming. Now, of course, any advocates of genetic engineering who heard me recite these assertions would by now be livid. In fact, they'd probably be standing up and screaming. And the fact that nobody's standing up and screaming, I think, implies that none of you are strong advocates of GMOs. And that fifth assertion would especially rouse their ire, because they claim that the genetic engineering venture is solidly aligned with science, and that anybody who opposes it is, in essence, anti-science. And They claim that, in fact, the opposition to genetically engineered foods is on a par with the campaign to deny climate science, to deny climate change. And they classify opposition to GMOs as, along with the campaign to deny global warming, as a key component in a major war that's being waged against science. Now, while it is true that science is being badly attacked, severely attacked, in regard to genetically engineered foods, the attack on science in regard to GMOs is very different, diametrically different, than the attack on science in regard to climate change. When it comes to climate change, the attack on science is coming from outside the scientific community. But in the case of GMOs, the attack on science is coming from inside the scientific community. It's an inside job that's especially insidious, and that's because it's being waged. The key people waging it are actually part of the scientific community, and they are acting under the banner of science. My book, Altered Genes, Twisted Truth, solidly documents this assault on science, this inside assault on science. An assault on science, probably one of the worst that's ever occurred in the name of science. And it documents there's been systematic twisting of the truth. So the part of that twisting, the deception, is that the process of creating GE foods, and sometimes they'll be referred to as GM foods. So GE stands for genetically engineered. GM stands for genetically modified, not the car manufacturer. The process of creating GE foods has been deceptively described to make it appear much more precise and far less disruptive than it actually is. Concomitantly, natural processes have been falsely described to make them look less precise and more disruptive than they actually are. So, by misrepresenting the GE process as precise and predictable, while portraying natural processes as unnaturally random and unruly, many scientists have induced the false impression that genetic engineering is natural and innocuous. Very false impression. Further, as in further twisting of the truth, false statements have consistently been issued about the tests on genetically engineered foods to cover up the substantial troubling results. What's more, the evidence that demonstrates the distortion of the evidence is solid, and its solidity has been attested by many experts. And my book presents a large amount of this evidence, and the presentation in the book has been praised by many experts. One of them is John Eichard, Professor Emeritus of Agricultural and Applied Economics at the University of Missouri. He stated about the book, "The evidence is comprehensive and irrefutable. No one has documented other cases of irresponsible behavior by government, regulators, and the scientific establishment nearly as well as Drucker documents this one." Another expert who has praised the book is David Schubert, a professor at the Salk Institute for Biological Studies, and the head of cellular neurobiology there. And he stated that the book is scientifically solid and truly outstanding, and through its masterful marshaling of facts, it dispels the cloud of disinformation that has misled people into believing that GE foods have been adequately tested and don't entail abnormal risks. Now, the irrefutable fact that the facts have been routinely misrepresented is in itself concrete evidence, evidence of how strongly the evidence weighs against the soundness of the GE food venture. Because, after all, it's quite obvious, if the facts are on your side, you're proud of them. You don't want to hide them. You don't want to distort them. You want to bring them out. You want to bring them out in their fullness. It's only when the evidence weighs against your position that you would be tempted to use underhanded means to suppress evidence, to misrepresent evidence. And unfortunately, the fact, the very fact, that the proponents of genetically engineered foods have been driven to distort the facts so extensively, really since the creation of the first GMO organism, genetically engineered organism, back in the early 1970s, years before, almost a decade before, the technology was able to create the first functional genetically engineered plant, the facts have been misrepresented by eminent scientists and scientific institutions. In fact, the misrepresentations predated the founding of the biotechnology industry, okay? So as my book demonstrates, although many people, when they hear about the distortions and deceptions that are propagated on behalf of GMOs, they think of Monsanto or DuPont or the other major multinational corporations that manufacture them. And clearly, those multinationals have been guilty of many distortions, but they probably wouldn't have invested the millions and millions in developing genetically engineered foods in the first place if the groundwork had not been laid, if the public had not been properly pacified about these, and the governments had been also induced to have a promotional policy by misrepresentations that were propagated by the eminent constituents of the scientific establishment. It's very important to understand. So the key deceptions have been disseminated by individuals and organizations operating in the name of science, under the banner of science. And they're probably, most of them, not even aware of the extent to which they have been disfiguring the facts. And for one thing, they pretty much talk to one another. And as we know, if a untruth is repeated often enough and one hears it back from one's peers, one starts to believe it oneself. There's a lot of self-deception that's been going on. And unfortunately, not just self-deception, but deception of government regulators, of the media, and the public. There's also lack of evidentiary basis on which a genuine consensus, scientific consensus, could have formed. We'll be seeing that as we review the evidence that is accumulated about the risks of genetically engineered foods. And one of the very telling studies that was done, it was a review of 8 scientific reviews that had been performed on genetically engineered foods. It was performed by Sheldon Krimsky, a professor at Tufts University, and it was published in a peer-reviewed journal in 2015. And it was titled, His review article was titled, An Illusory Consensus Behind GMO Health Assessment. So right in the title, you can see his main conclusion is there, in fact, here's the key statement, one cannot read these systematic reviews and conclude that the science on health effects of GMOs has been resolved within the scientific community. So not only did he say, not only is it clear that there has never been a scientific consensus, according to Krimsky's analysis, there couldn't have been a genuine one based on the evidence at hand because there's too much evidence of risk. But you would never know that from listening to the claims of the scientists and institutions that promote GMOs. In fact, here's an interesting one. You might probably were aware of this, many of you. An open letter was signed by more than 150 Nobel laureates in 2016. And in favor of GMOs, and one of their key assertions was, there has never been a single confirmed case of a negative health outcome for humans or animals from their, meaning GE foods, consumption. Whew. That is baloney coming, you know, from in the name of Nobel laureates. Well, it's a little less surprising when we see that a very large proportion of those Nobel laureates who were induced to sign that statement aren't life scientists at all. Their Nobel Prizes were won in either physics or economics, which certainly doesn't give them the authority to make such statements. They probably haven't reviewed the research. And most of the laureates who signed, who did win their Nobel Prize for medicine or physiology, are not molecular biologists either, not biochemists, probably, again, don't know the research. There was one Nobel laureate who actually has a key position with a biotechnology company who basically got all these other scientists to sign on and inducing them, telling them that basically science is under attack and this is very important, so he got them to sign on. But look at this, they've sullied their integrity because they signed something they took his word for it, and they were misled, and through that, their letter has misled hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people, because this has been well publicized and cited in many newspapers. In fact, it's very interesting. It was publicized to the world at a press conference at the National Press Club in Washington, D.C., and that biologist who organized it all, he was helped at that with a former PR person from Monsanto who was then moved on to having his own PR firm. So it was a propaganda stunt, but it's been very effective. Speaking of no harm from shown associated with any approved crop, the most widely planted and widely consumed GMO crop of them all, Monsanto's Roundup Ready soybean, was subjected to rigorous long-term testing, 2 years. Most testing is either short-term or medium-term, which is only 90 days. 2 year testing, and the results produced four different published papers, published in scientific peer-reviewed journals. And among the harms to the mice that were fed that soybean that were documented were disruptions to the functions of the liver and the pancreases, hardly minor inconveniences. Oops. So the, got ahead of myself there. Also, another genetically engineered crop that has been on the markets for many years and that hundreds of millions of people have been consuming, it was a variety of corn or maize, more technically termed, but a variety of maize that Monsanto had produced to be resistant to Roundup. Okay, NK603 is the technical name of that variety. Now, a group of scientists in Europe subjected that GMO corn to long-term testing. Monsanto had gotten it approved based on a 90-day test, medium test. So they wanted to test it for 2 years and see what would happen. And they replicated what Monsanto had done, except they made the test more rigorous. They tested the corn as sprayed with Roundup. They tested the corn when it had been grown without being sprayed to see whether there was something perhaps in the genetic engineering itself that was problematic. And they tested the Roundup herbicide separately from the corn. They administered a dose of the herbicide in the drinking water of a third group of experimental rats at the same level, the same dosage that the rats would have received by consuming a normal helping of the genetically engineered corn that had been sprayed. Guess what? They found that all three categories of experimental rats suffered significant harm. All three. So the corn, when sprayed with Roundup, was found to be toxic to livers and to the kidneys. The corn, when unsprayed, was also toxic, and the Roundup on its own was found to be toxic. So not a very good, so of course, this study was soundly attacked, roundly, I shouldn't say soundly because the attacks were unsound. It was roundly attacked, vehemently, viciously attacked, and not surprisingly, the attack was initially orchestrated by Monsanto and with scientists that often will work front for Monsanto and that have often been supported by Monsanto and to give the illusion that they're independent scientists, though. But eventually other components of this, of the pro-GMO scientific establishment took up the attack as well. Now, many scientists stood up for it. In fact, there was an open letter published by more than 140 scientists stating this research is solid and it deserves to stay published because the people doing the attack were trying to get the journal to retract the study so they could claim it was worthless and that it was no longer in the scientific literature. And after about a year of attacks and also after the appointment of a former Monsanto scientist to the editorial board of the journal, a decision was made to retract the study. But there's some interesting points. First, that study was designed as a toxicological study. In the course of the study, it detected an abnormal rate of tumor growth within the experimental rats that were eating the GMOs or the Roundup. Now, the standard protocol in a toxicological study is if tumors are detected, they need to be reported. So they reported that there were tumors too. That's all they did. That was an auxiliary part of the study. But because the toxicological study was solid, the editor of the journal couldn't really base retraction on that data. In fact, he conceded that the toxicological results were reliable. But he focused on the tumor reports, and he stated that they were inconclusive, and therefore that the study had to be retracted. Well, as it turns out, inconclusive results is not a valid grounds for retraction, okay? You can look at the standard criteria for retracting a study and you won't find inconclusive results because many results are inconclusive and yet that's news in itself. But the toxicological results were valid and they were conclusive. But what has been done? The scientific establishment has focused solely on the tumor results. They have pretended that the study was designed as a carcinogenicity study, and they say it was a flawed carcinogenicity study, and they've completely suppressed the fact that it was designed actually as a toxicological study, and it was a very sound toxicological study with very sound and troubling results. And even eminent institutions like the UK Royal Society, they play that game. Our National Academy of Science here in the US, they played that game. They have basically dismissed and disparaged that study. And here's the thing, in 2016, our National Academy of Science released a major report on genetically engineered foods, putting a happy face on them. And when it discussed that study, it basically stated again that it was unreliable, carcinogenicity study, inconclusive results, and it said, therefore, although the critics of GMOs claim that it shows that 90-day tests aren't long enough and that long-term two-year tests are needed to adequately detect problems, it said, no, it doesn't show that. It shows 90-day tests are all right. When clearly the toxicological results did show that 90-day tests were not adequate to screen for all of the problems, that it often will take longer for the full toxicological effects to manifest. That's just scientific fraud, but it's happened. Now, the retraction of that article, it's been criticized strongly by scientists who understand what's going on and are independent of the push to, you know, the push to promote GMOs. Here's one example, an article written by a scientist. It was published in the Journal of Biological Physics and Chemistry in 2018, and it was entitled Retraction by Corruption, the 2012 Seralini paper. That was the paper that was retracted. Now, because that paper was solid, five other journals offered to publish it, to republish it, and so it was republished in 2014 in another journal, and it is currently, again, part of the scientific literature. One of the other standards of science that's been badly broken is the fear that's been created within the scientific community to express concerns about GMOs. Scientists who do have concerns have been made afraid to express them. And those that have expressed them, who have done research that have shown problems, or who have in any way stood up and gone against this push to promote them, they often, if they don't have tenure, they've been denied tenure. If they have tenure, their offices and privileges have been taken away. If they're trying to get a job in the private sector, they don't get it. It's been, there's a major chilling effect that has been, that's permeated the scientific community. That, again, goes against science. Science, the lifeblood of science is open, honest communication of the facts and disagreement and honest argument. That's how scientific knowledge gets refined. It's not happening in the case of genetically engineered foods. People are really afraid to speak out. And there's a telling quote from Philip Riegel, a professor emeritus of biology at the University of Minnesota. He stated, and he's been involved in the movement to try to get the facts of genetic engineering out there much more, and he's been very bold, and he's come under a lot of attack. He stated, traditionally, scientists regarded intellectual honesty as part of collegiality, and there was accountability if one was caught telling lies. Accordingly, liars were blackballed. But since the rise of genetic engineering, the situation of molecular biology has to a significant degree become inverted. And when it comes to that technology, one gets blackballed for telling the truth. And he could have added, and gets rewarded for twisting the truth, because many people who twist it keep rising through the ranks.